This is The Guardian.
I'm Grace Dent, and this is Comfort Eating from The Guardian. A podcast where we pay homage to the lesser celebrated foods in life. Because even as a restaurant critic, I believe the food that matters most is often that snack you cobble together when you're curled up on the sofa. Each week, I ask my guest to lift the lid on what comfort foods have seen them through their lives. Because you can tell a lot about a person from what they eat behind closed doors.
Just a heads up here, there will be some strong language in this episode.
Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of Comfort Eating. You find me, I'm going to have to be honest, I'm clinging to my radiator at the moment. It is freezing outside and absolutely nobody should work on a day like this. Now, my tip for staying sane during these winter months is I plan the end of the day at the beginning. I know it sounds strange, but when I open my eyes, I like to put in place a plan I can execute at about 8 p.m. that just brings on the coziness. So I'm actually hanging my pyjamas on a radiator at the moment. They can't do you for it. Relaxed fit stretch jersey, since you asked. Only the best. These pyjamas will be gently simmering and singing to me as the day goes on. Come to me, come to me. I am also at about 8 o'clock going to be watching an 80s movie. I've got St. Elmo's Fire downloaded. I've got it all planned out. But not before my absolutely heavenly guest comes over to comfort eat with me today. Do you think he'll think it's impolite if we record the interview just lying, snuggling beside the radiator? I can only ask. Comedian Daniel Fox is on his way here as we speak. If you haven't seen his quickfire comedy sketches, please wake up. He's a TikTok starlet, amassing 250,000 followers during COVID lockdown. Now, his musical, Unfortunate, the Untold Story of Ursula the Sea Witch, is touring the nation at the minute. And he's about to tour his sellout stand-up show, Villain, which was described by Rolling Stone as utterly hilarious and effortlessly charismatic. What I want to know is, what does a man whose pen can whip up this level of magic eat to fuel his funny? Well, I'm going to find out, Anna.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Daniel Fox, welcome to Comfort Eating.
Thank you for having me. It's so lovely to be here. I've just been complimenting you off-air about your lovely scented candles.
Well, I've got a very expensive one there that I only allow myself for moments at a time.
Oh.
That's the Diptyque one. I still feel guilty every time I burn it, like I'm just burning money.
Is that the one that smells like a log fire?
No, it smells like my vagina.
Well, what a wonderful, beautiful vagina you have, Grace.
I think we've covered everything. That's the end of the
interview. And that's the end.
As a comedian with a burgeoning career over the last few years, you have supported UK comedy stars like Judy Love, Sophie Hagen, Josh Widdicombe, Rosie Jones, and in doing so, you have shared rides with them, covering thousands of miles on the British motorways. What I want to know is, what are the do's and don'ts of car sharing?
When I was touring with Rosie and with Sophie, it was months that we were sort of like 3-4 dates a week. My car has done 50,000 miles in the last 2 years, which I worked out is around the circumference of the Earth twice and a bit with these two.
Oh, my God. Around the circumference of the Earth with 3 or 4 stand-up comedians in a small car.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound like an ITV special? Yeah. So for ages, we came up with all sorts of like conversations and games and things to keep us going. But after a while, as the driver, sometimes I'm like, you look tired. You close those eyes. I'll just pop a little podcast on, maybe. Maybe I'll finally get to listen to my audiobook and have a moment of fucking peace to myself if you just close those eyes.
I want to role play. So we've got in the car and we're driving from Glasgow to Devon.
Yes.
And I get in and I say, oh, I'm so glad you're driving, Daniel, because I can tell you all about my relationship.
I go, that's amazing, Grace. You have 14 to 17 minutes to tell me about that before the latest Jilly Cooper or something goes on there.
Do you ever feel, though, like getting out of the car at Fortin Services and just texting somebody and going, I can't believe she shagged, blah, blah.
Yeah, I have the whole thing on voice record the whole time.
Are you allowed to eat smelly food in the car?
Absolutely, yes. As long as it's not like something I don't like. But I'm open to fast food being in the car. I would say most of my rules for like a good car share is really being on it with the snack coffee situation.
Yes.
Getting in sync with who wants to stop when, who needs a wee when. Being like, we can do 2 hours now. Also, my absolute rule is we're not stopping at that service station if it's a Costa service station. I won't. It's battery acid. I'm not doing it. I will keep going until we hit a Pret or a Starbucks or a Leon.
How pass ag are you if you say to everybody, does everyone want a wee? And then like 11 miles later, I realise I have cystitis.
I'm actually very forgiving. You know that film where Tom Hanks lives in an airport? He like, has to live in the airport
The terminal.
Yeah, yeah. I think I could live in a service station and have quite a fun time. As long as there was like little...
Which one?
Ooh.
Go on.
South Mims. There's a little Waitrose.
Ooh.
There's a Pret. And that's all I need.
Just going between the artisan cheese baguette.
Yeah, exactly.
And a little shifty around the Prosecco section.
The little Prosecco section, the lovely nibbles and bits they have. I can go over to the area where there's all the like slot machines and stuff. So I can always see the people in there and go, well, it could be worse. I could be one of you. A lifetime in here is better than 10 minutes in there.
Every week, my guest shares with me their ultimate comfort food snack. It is a jolt of joy when you want to draw the curtains on your day. Daniel Fox, what have you brought for me?
I have really lent in to the brief of what you eat when no one's looking.
Thank you. So many people are not telling the truth on here. They're coming on and it's something not embarrassing. I want you to embarrass us.
This is, I think you're going to be appalled. So this is what I'm going to eat. Let's talk cars. It's 1 a.m. I've just got back from a gig. My boyfriend is sleeping. The only thing open is a Nisa local. I'm having to concoct a meal from that I can cook in 3 minutes in the microwave.
Any meal that begins at a Nisa.
Yeah.
It's not. You're at a sad point in your life, aren't you?
This is a sad meal that I take great delight in. I'm calling it a Nisa surprise. Shall I show you?
Please take off the tea towel.
I'm removing the cloche.
Oh. Oh, right. And like all the best comfort eating dishes, I have no idea what it is. So the bowl is vomit?
So there's some vomit in the bowl. And into that, we can dip these lentil kernels. So
is this rice?
Do you want me to walk you through it?
Please do.
This is an Uncle Ben's spicy rice.
Oh, man, I'm getting them.
Into which I have put a small amount of baked beans.
Oh.
Some sweet corn, some smoky Tabasco sauce, and some cheese.
Everything in this bowl.
Yeah.
In its packeted form would survive till 2028.
Yes.
Oh, it's got a kick.
Yeah.
It's got a kick.
And you can use these as sort of croutons. These are like those tomato and basil hummus crisp, like the bougie crisps you can get from the corner shop. And I would probably like, maybe I would dip in.
This is the hottest thing anyone's ever brought in. Is that Tabasco?
Yeah. It's like the Chipotle Tabasco.
The crisps are good. Mm. Do you know something though? That is good.
I think it's great. It's like an unctuous. It's a spicy. Are you getting flashbacks to the jungle though?
No.
If we had this in a mess tin.
No.
No.
I really am not, because there is literally no seasoning of any type.
Really?
None. If I had to go in again, I would smuggle a lot more spices inside myself. Because that's the only.
I could eat a kangaroo testicle with some Tabasco on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You just need a little bit of mixed herbs or something like
some
that.
Some tarragon on that witchetty grub.
That is my advice for anybody that ever went in. It's just, you know, make the most of your cavities. Because you're going to regret it. They will check you on the way in, but they didn't put a torch up me. And now I know that.
Well, then I could get all sorts through that. Yeah. Okay.
Well, they call it the Chatham Pocket. I heard that in a documentary. It's because in Chatham, apparently, the Chatham people that they take into police stations, they're renowned for being able to smuggle things up them, and they very often find like a full phone charger.
Yeah, I'm gonna lean in. If I ever go on, they'll be like, how did Daniel get that scented candle, that full spice rack, and a non-stick pan into the jungle? Oh, it's through his Chiswick pocket.
Practice, darling.
Practice, darling. Willpower.
Daniel.
Hi.
It was... Moving on. Daniel, it wasn't always the glamour of stage lights and stodgy motorway snacks. You grew up in Hampshire.
Yes, I grew
with
up
your
Hampshire.
Mom. Mm-hmm. Grew up in Hampshire with your mom, your dad, your older brother. This was like a rural village life. Okay. In a few sentences, paint me a picture of young Daniel.
Okay. Pompous. I was a very pretentious child. I used to write poetry when I was about 6 years old. My parents both have strong northern accents, but I was raised in the south, and I at some point decided, I think I shall be Oscar Wilde, actually, is what I'm going to aim for.
Are your parents like proper Yorkshire?
Yeah, fairly.
So what did they do when you suddenly got up one day and decided that you were Rupert Everett?
Well, I think they are to blame, because they're very encouraging, very like, do whatever you want. And they're also both quite businessy, sciencey people. And I think when I started being like, I want to write, I want to be funny, they were like, great, do that.
Did you have mealtimes together?
Yes.
All around the same table?
Yes.
So you walk in from primary school, you're all sitting together. What's cooking?
All sorts. My mum is like a very adventurous cook. And sometimes that was like amazing stuff. Mm. But other times it was like, oh shit, there's a famous month where she was really into one of Jamie Oliver's books and everything had grated lemon zest in it. We had like a lemon zest bolognese and everyone was appalled.
What year is 2000?
Probably like 2004, 2005.
Yeah, 2004, prime Jamie Oliver time.
Yeah.
And your mum went for that.
His powers, and she was in.
Did your mum cook puddings?
My mum made an amazing chocolate puddle pudding, like a self-sourcing pudding. That was like a treat if that appeared.
Hang on. Chocolate puddle pudding. Yes. It's a self-sourcing pudding.
Yeah.
Only a middle-class person would say that. So that's it. Now I'm putting you in the middle-class category.
Wait, which bit?
Self-sourcing. Do you mean it was runny?
Well, no. I have never used that term before. But I looked up chocolate puddle pudding and all of the results were like Australian people being like, a self-sourcing pudding. So now I'm like, oh, is that what it's actually called? It was basically, you put like a sloppy sauce into the oven in like a baking dish, and then a crust kind of like rises to the top and forms, but underneath it's molten chocolate magma.
So when she's making that, is that happy times?
Yeah, the whole house smells like chocolate. When that comes out of the end, you're like, oh, amazing. I should learn to make that, actually.
you were a mid-90s child. You were born the year that Oasis released their debut album, Definitely Maybe. By the time you're 7 or 8, we've gone from Oasis to Sugar Babes' Round and Round, Christina Aguilera's Dirty. Back then, when you're 7 or 8, are you into this type of pop?
No. I was into like such specific things, I think, at that point. I was obsessed with River Cottage. I don't know exactly when that came out, but I was obsessed with Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall's River Cottage. I remember my grandparents had Sky, and I remember going, my brother was always really excited because he could watch Pokemon, and I was excited because that meant I could watch River Cottage. And I would just sit and dream about, like, oh, I could have a small holding. I could catch eels in a wicker basket.
And it was so, yeah, Hugh just kind of bumbling about.
Mm, just like really, the idea of like growing tomatoes in a polytunnel and selling the excess at a local market in Dorset. I was like, what a dream.
Did you feel like you were very different to the other kids?
Yeah, I definitely think I felt older than I was, like old before my time. And I think I've sort of chat about this with like other gay friends. I think there's different types of camp. Because yeah. Like I think there's that very bubbly kind of like darling fab blah, blah, kind of camp, and like yes queen camp, but I think I'm a sort of tired old lady camp, which is that I want to go to the countryside and grow courgettes and make a Moroccan pie.
Yeah,
and I think I've always been that
tired old lady camp. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sort of 5 times divorced, a lot of money rolling around from the 6th one that she pushed down the stairs.
Yeah. But that's the dream. I have got to that age now where I just feel like I just need somebody with a lot of shares, some land, a heart defect, and who will...
A trick hip.
Yeah.
And a well-polished stare.
And then I would just buy a little mini trampoline and just like sit. I would stand in the garden bouncing on it in a bikini every day and then encourage them to go on it. I haven't thought too deeply about this. You don your uniform, you set out to your local secondary school. What kind of pupil are you?
Quite goody-two-shoes, but also class clown. Like, it was always, as primary school, I was always like teacher's best friend. Always like wanted to be chatting with the teachers. Vivid memories of sitting at the front desk and our two teachers, the head teacher and my teacher, would always eat lunch together. And it was like... like a bruschetta kind of thing.
Yes.
On which she would then open a tin of sardines, put tinned sardines on it, and then sort of elegantly eat that at the front of the class. And I always remember watching that thinking, how impossibly chic. Whereas now I look at it, it's quite wartime actually, but like, I was just desperate to like listen into the gossip that they were saying about their husbands and the other teachers.
I love that, how we're so influenced by that, just by tiny glimpses we get of other humans. It's I don't think it is about our life is about like academic learning often. It's about that. It's about seeing that person and just the way that she puts the fish.
Yeah.
Like is a hint of another world out
there. Yeah.
And then listening to the rhythms of the languages as well, how people communicate.
So much of I said she said. Yeah. And then she said and I said she did. Well, I said she did. And I've just always wanted to be that. Again, tired old lady camp.
Do you make friends easily at school?
Quite easily, actually. Mm. Yeah. Primary school, definitely. So, and secondary school. I think I've always gravitated towards people that I would have things in common with and not found that too hard. Definitely made enemies as well. Mm. I was quite kind of bullied at school, secondary school.
Yeah.
Because really early, actually, especially given it was like the... mid-2000s were very homophobic atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I kind of came out at school at like 11 years old.
Bloody hell. You know, because at my school in the 80s, if anyone had actually dared, had the temerity to come out, I think that everybody would have just immediately built a wicker man.
Yeah, yeah. Executed them then, and then 100%.
But, you know, even though they were quite clearly kids that, they were gay.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you do it? What?
It's weird. I can't like fully remember it almost. I don't know if I've like partly blocked parts of it out, but like I had my close circle of friends, I had a friend who was also gay. Mm-hmm. And so we sort of had that together of being like, oh, I think I feel like this. And I feel, and we would sort of like very platonic, mm-hmm. But sort of self-discovery of being like, and I like, maybe I'll tell this person, maybe, and able to discuss those things. And also humor, I think. There was a lot of like deflecting, like going on the attack back when people came for you. Thinking back, I'm like, it was multiple times a day. Like every time you moved from one class to the other, two or three people would yell at you or someone would shove you or something.
On reflection, are you glad that you just bloody did it at 11? Or would you have had a better school time by not saying it?
No, I'm glad. I mean, I don't think it would work for everyone that way. But for me, the alternative would have just been hiding it and pretending to be something else, which I've never been ashamed of it. I never had a thing of going, oh God, I wish I wasn't that. Oh no, I can't tell anybody. I think probably because my family are very kind of open and accepting. Probably watched an awful lot of Will and Grace around that time and was like, oh yeah, great. Like gay people can be fun and cool. And like, I've always like celebrated that side of myself and been glad of it. But just had to deal with the consequences of that. I do think actually a lot of bullying is a questioning thing. Like a lot of the time when kids are picking it, just like, are you gay, mate? Or mate, you're gay, aren't you? And actually I did, again, another thing in my sort of last couple of years of school was being like, well, yeah. And them going, oh, and not really having anything past that. It's more the like interrogating of it because they can't quite wrap their minds around it, I think.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, take me back. You're on the way home from school after a day of being shouted at and shoved in the corridor between lessons. What is your go-to snack for a little bit of comfort? I mean, you really needed it, didn't you?
I would definitely go for like a Turkish delight, like a Fry's Turkish delight.
Of course you would.
Because I watched The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and was like, well, I love that. How glamorous.
Fry's, full of Eastern promise. I bloody loved Turkish delight for those reasons. So glamorous.
Yeah, it doesn't even taste that nice.
La,
but
la,
just
la, la, la. The advert was like women and kind of
yes.
You know,
do you remember?
Like,
I keep thinking about the Special K advert.
Yeah,
do you remember the Special K diet?
Of course, I remember the special. I'm a Generation X.
Yeah,
I spent my entire life being told that if I had 40 grams of Special K
twice a day,
it's like if you can pinch more than an inch.
Oh my God, I forgot.
Maybe
that
you
bit.
Need Special K. you fat fuck,
you
basically,
fucking,
you know? How dare you and have like, some lovely frosties that actually taste of things?
They'd be like the glamorous woman rising up out of a pool in her red cozy.
Yeah.
Oh. You'd be like, so aspirational. 11-year-old me, like, I'd love to be her.
You you dream of escaping Hampshire from an early age. What's the vision for life beyond these rural climes? What does it look like?
So I'm leaving Hampshire. It's very much grew up on the era of like The Devil Wears Prada, Ugly Betty, all of these things about like move to the big city and work in a fashion magazine or whatever it was. And I applied to 5 universities in London. I didn't really care which one I went to. I just wanted to live in London.
Yeah. But you want to work in fashion mags?
No, but I wanted to...
You just wanted to be in the office.
I wanted to be there. Yeah, I just wanted to sort of linger around the, in the lobby. I had vague pretensions of I'll do something sort of sultry and beautiful while I'm there, and then some sort of powerful businessman will marry me, and then I'll just do my arty little hobbies.
But that's a beautiful dream.
Isn't that a beautiful
dream? I mean,
dream?
That is absolutely perfect, isn't it? You're going to go to London and you're just going to live glamorously. So what actually does happen?
What happens is I go to King's in London, and the first year you get to stay in halls, which was like on the South Bank. And I thought, oh yeah, this is what London living is. Of course, this is what I always imagined. 3 minutes walk to Covent Garden in the centre and everything. Then second year rolled around and I had to move to like zone 4.
Oh, God.
And suddenly was like, oh no, this is what London living is. Okay.
When you get there and you're a fresher though, do things improve?
Yeah. So university, total U-turn. Everyone's super liberal, very open, very accepting, very lovely. But I definitely had a few years in my early 20s where I was like trying to be a different sort of gay, I think. Nice. I was like still very openly gay and fine with it, but thought like, I remember deliberately lowering my voice for like 3 years.
Hang on. Right. No, I want you to... Tell me, I want you to do your I am a different type of gay voice. So, hello.
Hi, Grace. Really nice to meet you. So I would kind of talk in a bit more of like a monotone and a bit more kind of just like what I thought straight people talked like.
Oh, my God. That's exhausting.
Isn't
darling.
It exhausting? And obviously would never maintain it for long
enough. I mean, I'm laughing, but why? Why are you doing that?
I think in my mind, it's totally like internalised homophobia, as they call it, of a part of me going like, it's totally fine to be gay. Another part of me going, but not that sort of gay person, not like flamboyant, not feminine. So I try and be a bit more neutral, I think.
But what is it about the campness and the slight eccentricity?
Yeah.
Theatrical. Why aren't you allowed to be that?
I think I was very preoccupied with, I wanted to be attractive. And in my mind, there's a huge, this is another thing, the gay community, you go on like a dating app, there's so many people where in their little bio, it's like, no femme, no camp people.
Yeah.
And it's just really ingrained this sense of like, we can be gay, but we can't be outwardly. It's cool if you're not. And it's more attractive to be masculine and all this sort of stuff. But I think what it actually is, I've done so much like therapy and thinking about this.
All
comes down to the world hating women. People hate gay men because they don't like men acting feminine. And people hate lesbian women who are butch because they don't like women acting not like women. It's all actually comes down to, because you get all the time people being like, oh, I don't mind if you're gay as long as you're a top, as long as you're not the one taking it. Would be like a classic like bullying. And it's like, it took me a while to try and undo that.
You're at King's College. Are you doing English?
English Lit, yeah.
It's a very academically competitive uni. So when you're up against a hard essay deadline, how do you stay awake all night?
So much coffee. I got into coffee. I'm a coffee fiend. And when I was doing my like dissertation and essay and all of those things, I got to a point where I was having, I didn't like coffee at the time. And I started having an instant coffee mix of a mug with maybe 4 or 5 tablespoons of instant coffee in, not a lot of hot water. And then I'm like pinching my nose and slugging it down, swishing cold water to rinse my teeth so they don't get stained. And then just buzzing off my tits while I'm writing an essay.
You might as well have a line of base sulf that you've bought in a pub by that point.
Yeah, I should have just got into like Ritalin or something because it would have been better for my body.
So hang on, you're doing instant coffee?
Yeah, because I didn't like coffee, so I wasn't getting good stuff. But by the time that was done and all the essays were done, then I was like, well, I like coffee now, the amount of times I've had it.
That's just addiction, darling. Yes. Basically.
Well, I like heroin now, so I guess I get the good stuff. And now I'm really, really considering one of those like artisanal espresso machines. I think I could really get into all the bells and whistles and tamping. And
that never ends, though.
Yeah.
The more you spend on the machine, there's always another machine that you can buy.
Some like £1,500 Heston monstrosity.
And that goes on until death, as
madness.
Far as I can.
Madness or death,
I can tell. Creatively, things start to happen at uni. What is the moment when you actually think, hang on a minute, I could write, I could do this?
I think because I was always writing little stories and poems and songs when I was a kid, but never finish. I'd always be like, I'm writing my novel now, at like 11 years old, and then write 3 pages and get obviously go no further. In my mind, it was like this mammoth thing that you never finished. And obviously some really maudlin novel at 11 years old, being like, The Crying Nun in the Bell Tower by Daniel Fox, age 12. But at the end, my best friend who I lived with was like head of like the student theatre society, and the group needed a play to take to Edinburgh. So they were taking, like, people could write them and then submit them and people could vote on which one they would bring. And she was like, oh, you should write one. And I had, like, 3 days deadline. I love a deadline. So I just rattled out this first draft of a play about an old lady, old northern matriarch, who dies at, like, 79 years old, wakes up in heaven. Basically, my grandma's condensed into one woman, bosses everyone around so much that she ends up taking over and is God, kind of from then on.
Love it.
And we took that to Edinburgh. And then kind of from there, I was like, oh, now that I've finished one play, I know that I can do that again.
If they'd given you 6 months to write that, you would never have written it.
No, I would never, ever have done it. But with my 9 shots of Kenko and my jittery hand, I did that.
I think that's where the best work comes from. The best work comes from, I like to feel the gun in my mouth, right?
Yeah, truly.
I like to feel the screaming of a marketing department saying, we will pull this entire budget unless you come up with it. And I'm like, whoa! Like that.
The click of the revolver of the Guardian against your forehead.
100%. You graduate from uni in 2015. Mm-hmm. You're doing stand-up. You're writing musicals with your collaborator, Robin Grant. You start to tour. Unfortunate, the untold story of Ursula the Sea Witch. Things are going really, really well. And then COVID hits. Mm. So the handbrake goes on. Do you feel like your wings have been clipped?
Yeah, there was a lot of like despair, actually. I'd been working like a day job, like anyone, post-uni while I was trying to write. And then I'd gradually, as the writing and like the plays and the musicals started doing better, I could afford to go down to like, I'm working 3 days a week at this recruitment company. And then just as I was like, I might be about ready to quit this job and go full-time creative, COVID. Obviously tons of much more awful things than my creative career were ruined by COVID. But I remember I moved back to my parents' house. I remember just like spending a year sitting in the garden being like, what a waste of my life. Like all the momentum is gone.
Why'd you go back?
I was living on my own, which I'd loved, living on my own in London in a tiny, tiny flat, like a studio. Mm-hmm. And was just like, who knows how long this is going to go on. Mm. I'm going to go mad if I stay here. So went back to theirs and just got to like hang around with the dogs and my mum and my dad. They've got like a nice garden, so just sort of sitting in the garden. And actually had a lovely year. In some ways, it was a really lovely year, which I know is horrible to say.
No, but you're allowed to say it.
Yeah.
Because I think that what went on over those years was so incredibly weird. And we'll never experience anything as strange in that way again and all react in that way anyway. Yeah. So you shouldn't have any guilt about any of it. Did you cook together?
Cooked so much.
Banana bread.
I made a banana bread. I made a cinnamon banana bread.
Were you one of those twats that had a sourdough starter?
My mum was that twat. I didn't have a sourdough starter. I can't be bothered with them. I like sourdough enough, but I don't want a pet. I want bread.
I just feel like I missed the referendum when we decided that was actually nice bread.
Banana bread I can get on board with.
Yeah, I know,
it's a fad, but
sourdough just like you get given it and you eat it, but I don't want a bread that I have to distend my jaw like a boa constrictor.
You know when you go to like quite a hipster brunchy place and they give you it in the little cardboard box with a wooden cutlery? Like, sorry, I need like a small craft saw to get through this bread you've given me. What are you doing giving me this like makeup brush to cut through?
So who's there? Is it just you and your mum and dad?
Yeah, me, my mum, my dad, and my boyfriend. At some point, he moved in, basically.
Hang on, stop.
Hello.
First of all, who is this boyfriend? And secondly, how did you just kind of drop it on your parents that another person is turning up?
They invited him. They were like, oh, he should just come and stay with us. He was in the military, in the RAF, and he, basically, they... For the first lockdown, they like locked them all down on this RAF base.
Yeah.
Because they have to keep that stuff running, like the fast response stuff. I don't know the details of it, but
yeah.
He's like an engineer, an engineer in the RAF. So he just had to leave his home, move into this barracks and live there for like months. He is from Grimsby. He's a professional wrestler. And we met on Tinder like 5 years ago.
There is nothing about this man you've told me so far that isn't utterly fanciable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like everything about him. I'm sorry. So he's a northerner. He's in the RAF. He's an engineer and he's a wrestler.
Mm.
And he was on Tinder.
He was on Tinder. He just
how quickly did you like swipe
like
on that?
Whiplash in my fingers. they've not recovered to this day. I have arthritis now. And we must have met... It's such like a... I was traveling down from a meeting with a theatre in like Huddersfield, maybe.
Yeah.
And I think the train must have gone past somewhere where he was near Doncaster or Grimsby at enough of a time that our radiuses... We must have swiped as the train went past, basically. One of us must have done a swipe. What a beautiful modern love story.
But it is a beautiful modern love story, that is.
Yeah,
that's
it's
how...
a low chance. There will have only been like a window of about a minute, I think, where one of us swiped the other one.
Hang on. So what was your radius? Was it like 10 miles or something?
I think it was 10 or 20,000 miles. Yeah, no, it was I definitely finished London. I'd swiped and I had to the point where London kept popping up being like, no one in your area that you've not. So,
you again.
Still alone. I think 5-6 miles.
Right.
It wasn't huge.
So you're coming down from the north of England.
Yeah.
And just at that point, you see him because he's in your radius.
Yeah.
And you swipe.
Yeah.
And then he swipes back.
And he swiped back at some point, and then, yeah. So that was cute. Been together for like 5 years now.
You start writing sketches from your bedroom with different characters, camp characters, like supervillain's gay assistant and... parents that make up profound things their children have said. They are very funny.
Oh, thank you.
And they explode on TikTok. How does that manifest? Does it build momentum over a matter of weeks?
So sudden. That's the only thing I could relate to like overnight success. Every other day I would put out a new sketch, which is a lot. They took so long, especially at the start, to write and record and edit them all together.
That's every single day from the moment you wake up until the moment you go to bed.
Exactly. Yeah. And like now I have a bit more joy with it because I've massively reduced how much I do. But even so, there's always the feeling of pressure. But I made like 3 or 4 a week for 2 or 3 months with not a lot of feedback happening. I remember saying to my boyfriend, I'm putting so much work into this. Mm. And I think they are good, but it's not going anywhere. And he was like, well, you're doing so well, we'll just keep going. And the next one got like 3 million views.
Which one was that?
I don't even do it anymore, but it was a sketch of the horrible woman that makes really good coffee.
I know exactly. Honestly, there is a shot. It's the fact that she's at the machine, but maintaining an evil glare. And it's when she's like going, and she's doing a spell,
like a spell over
it.
The coffee.
Right, here's what I want to know. you go to school and some people are horrible at school, and then you go and you go to uni and things get a lot better, but then you become big on social media. It's opening the door to the room of madness. Does that not just take you under right away?
I think it could have so easily gone either way. I think I've got a really thick skin, but people are horrible. I mean, it's really lowered my opinion of the human race.
Seeing the sort of
stuff people feel comfortable saying when they think they're anonymous. I love replying to them. I love sending them a personal message, like a DM. I will always, once a day, I'm in the DMs with someone trying to be as polite as possible to just draw their attention to what they've said to me. And like some of them, you can feel them going, oh shit, I've been really horrible, which I love.
But some of them just...
like, some of them got double down.
Absolutely love it and just like basically get a hard on over the fact that you've said, do you really think calling somebody a ugly fuck pig at 1 o'clock in the morning is the best use of your time, sir? That's amazing.
Yeah, never thought you'd see it, but I love that you have.
Exactly. Yeah. In your sketches, you're often punching this type of self-satisfied middle-class character. What I want to know is, like, where is this coming from?
It's absolutely the people that I was drawn to when I was younger. It's my teachers in primary school. It's my the sort of people that were around me where I thought, that's amazing. It is also me, had I become a successful jazz singer with a business husband. Like, it could... Yes. I am a hair's width from being one of these, like, just the definition of, like, white company middle class, neon candle... yummy mummy, who's saying horrible things and lying about her child's profound quotes. Like, it could be me.
I love that.
It's an outlet for her.
During COVID, something else is happening for you at this time, because you've said it's when you found real self-acceptance.
I think so. And I also think I did a lot of, I've never strayed far from my 7-year-old self. I did a lot of journaling under an apple tree in the garden. And it felt like, in some ways, a lot of wasted time. In some ways, I think it was really positive. And like, I got to spend that time with my family. But in other ways, because I think I was like 25 when lockdown happened. And I came out of it like 27, 28.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I've sort of missed my mid-20s.
Yeah.
I've just gone from like early to late.
Yeah.
And I think it just set a bit of a fire under me of like, oh, I can't waste any more time. Because I think I've always been like, oh, when I do this, when I get to this point, then I'll be happy. Then I'll be myself. When I've achieved this, then I'll do that thing. And I was like, there's no guarantee that you get to do that. So you've just got to be it now. I remember binning most of my clothes or sending, like, donating them or selling them and buying a new wardrobe, finding new stuff that I liked to wear and sort of leaning in being like, what would Tilda Swinton wear? Maybe I'll get some of that. Cate Blanchett cape, yes please. And sort of came out of lockdown with a slightly different vibe.
Because I've seen pictures of you recently and you've got like a little kind of double pearl necklace sometimes going on, a little polar neck.
Love a pearl necklace, love a polar neck. I've got a cape. I did an advert for some terrible company and they paid me a nice fee, but I felt bad about the company I'd done it for. And I spent the entire thing on a Burberry cape. And now I don't feel bad about doing it because I think...
Oh my God, I've never felt so seen. That's exactly what I do. Oh my God, isn't it awful? A Burberry cape though. I mean, it's not something that you can wear everywhere.
I disagree.
Okay, we're almost done. But your comedy career is blooming. And from those days recording TikTok videos in COVID, you have emerged like a butterfly as a full-blown stand-up comedian. You're about to tour a new show. It's called Villain. I've done a lot of thinking about this. And my favourite villain, I think, is Alexis Carrington in Dynasty. Joan Collins, of course. She just spent her whole time kind of just turning up like little pinch waist, big shoulder pads, a lot of hair.
Is it her... that where she takes her earrings off to answer the phone?
Always.
I love that so much.
Never did one nice thing for anyone ever in any episode.
How fabulous.
And if she ever was actually behaving well, it was evidence that she had a brain tumour or something like that. It was so out of character. What's the fascination with villains?
Well, one, they're very often coded as queer or gay mm-hmm. or whatever. They're very yeah. camp. And that is either through them literally just sounding a bit camp, always having a cocktail, always being a bit limp of the wrist and sort of mincing around. It's very yeah. sort of louche and fab.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's gone on for thousands of years that it's been the thing, because they are the characters who by necessity are outside of the societal norm,
yeah.
doing their own thing, living by their own rules, mm-hmm. and often trying to change something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hero is trying to keep something the same, stop something from being changed. And the hero usually becomes accepted by the end of the film or the book or the play because they have done something that means everyone else goes, do you know what? You're one of us. Whereas the villain's like, I don't want to be one of you. You're ghastly.
It's absolutely right there.
Yeah.
Like the villain isn't a people pleaser.
Mm. Right. 100%. And they live in an architecturally yeah. advanced house.
Yeah.
They wear couture.
Yeah.
They have a few witty comebacks ready to go.
Yeah.
You have a bit of eyeliner on. There's no quantifying themselves to fit into any other thing.
Yes.
Which is kind of the pinnacle of like the queer rebellion. It's kind of like that is pride, isn't it? And that's what, so that is, it's a kind of celebration of that.
So finally, Daniel, you and your boyfriend Adam have moved out of your parents' house and you live together in London now. When you're back from gigging and your days and your nights are very much your own, what are you making Adam to show him how much you love him?
If I'm feeling particularly loving, it's a steak.
Okay.
Or a roast dinner. I love a roast dinner. I don't eat meat, but I can cook a good steak.
Is it very bad that I want to see a photo of him?
You can absolutely see a photo of
oh
him.
My God,
let me get a hot one. Hang on.
Good.
I'll get one of him wrestling.
Please do. Honestly, anything where he's just in small shorts. Anything. Spandex. I mean, I'll take, yeah.
Okay, well, here's a very dark picture of him.
Holy God. Now that is a good looking man.
See if I've got another one.
Oh my God, he's beardy.
He's a big beardy boy.
That is a, like...
The one not wearing the shirt here.
Oh my God.
Lovely.
Oh my God, he's like a proper wrestler. That man yeah. is like... That is a man who could break down a shed and pack it down for you and just put it outside the house
yeah.
and it would be taken, like, you know, like practical things.
Yeah. And when I swiped right, I thought, he could break down my shed. My Chiswick shed.
Daniel Fox, thank you so much for comfort eating with me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm just going to talk all day. This episode of Comfort Eating was produced by Ruth Abrahams. The executive producer is Lucy Greenwell. The music was written by Axel Cacoutier. Visuals by Sophie Harrow. Mixing and sound design by Solomon King. If you love this podcast, then you'll love my book, Comfort Eating. It's a slice of joy, sprinkled with nostalgia about my family, stories of the making of this podcast, and recipes which will leave you, well, frankly, bewildered. Finally, go on, leave us a review, and you can follow or subscribe so that you never miss an episode.
This is The Guardian.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.